This is a Dynamike Network podcast.
Welcome, welcome back to the land of Max Destruction. That's right. Ken is back, bitches. I had to take a 1 week take a knee. So my daughter actually had to have emergency tonsillitis. So it was a little hectic, but luckily my boy Scott, the man Camacho, actually did a great job. I mean, I wasn't shocked. I was a little more worried about your guest host, Zach. I love Zach from Senjo World. How you doing, man?
I'm outstanding, dude. I can't wait for the matchup today. We got a bunch of new stuff I want to talk to you about, and I'm glad to hear that your daughter is fine, doing well, recovering. Lots of ice cream and popsicles.
Oh yeah, no, it's shocking how much or how little that's changed since us growing up, right? Like everybody was waiting for their tonsils to come out when we were growing up. Now it's like, well, we'll take them out if we need them, and boy, howdy, did she! But luckily, like I said, the show went on. Like I said, you guys did an outstanding job, and I was happy to listen to it. I'm not gonna lie, it was like watching a little baby grow up, It's my podcast is doing what it needs to do, which is outstanding. I did enjoy your guys' wit and banter, but I'm not gonna lie, I was missing a little bit. Scott, I feel like we should probably go to the mat.
Yeah, that's right. The Macho Man Randy Savage here to tell you that the Max Destruction Jabronis will be heading to your ears soon, entering the squared circle. That's right, they're heading for the big time. Ooh, yeah.
I had to. Luckily, we've got buddies that are able to reach out to the other side and bring my favorite wrestler back from the dead, Macho Man Randy Savage. And honestly, I don't think anybody else could introduce taking it to the mat for the Max Destruction podcast. But Scott, why don't you regale us on what's going on as we lay it up to WrestleMania?
First off, that was awesome. You caught me off guard with that one. But hitting the mat, yes. So we already talked about the main events are set. We have the biggest tag team in wrestling history, as they call it, The Rock. He has a new name now. He's calling himself the Final Boss because he owns the company. And he just did a segment on SmackDown where he brought out his guitar and was singing, doing his rock concert and talking trash to everyone on there. Freaking awesome. Mid-Carter's, the U.S. title is set now. Our United States champion. This is your United States champion, Logan Paul, is gonna defend against Randy Orton and Kevin Owens, triple threat match. And then the Intercontinental Champion, Gunther, is gonna face against Sami Zayn. And then we have the Battle of the Twins, the Usos go one-on-one against each other. And that's pretty much it for wrestling news, bro.
I saw a meme actually before we started recording today, and it said, "Never did I think that I would be able to turn on the TV, see The Rock wrestling at WrestleMania, a new season of the X-Men animated series, and still feel like my back hurts. You know, how is it I'm pushing 40, but it's like turning on the TV back when I was growing up. It's ridiculous. I want to know where The Rock gets all of the energy that he has to be able to do everything that he is doing simultaneously. Because I'm sure he's got like 4 movies in production too, you know, and he's single-handedly running the XFL. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and his his new men's cosmetic line that he just came out, his energy drink. He eats coffee. So, I mean, that's his thing right there.
I mean, and I'm sure that the pharmaceutical industry is happening within him. But, you know, in my mind, all I can think of is if you smell what The Rock is cooking, then you know you're going to be doing a good time. And I can't wait. Gunter, so I will say last year's WrestleMania is when I tried to get back in. Because, again, it doesn't matter where you are in your fandom of wrestling. If you were ever involved in the WWF before, you know WrestleMania was like a national holiday. So you can come back at any time. And luckily there are streaming services now that you can just pick up and go through. You know, you don't have to wait and try to record Raw on Monday night while you're trying to watch Nitro on TNT. And, oh, by the way, you have, you know, total nonstop action and then AEW. You don't have to do all that. Like, there's one place you can go. So I remember watching Gunter wrestle last year, and I don't think I'd ever had more fun watching somebody get chopped as much as hit that man doing it. And anybody that says that shit's fake has never seen the ground beef that is the result of all the chops that come from that guy. So I can't wait to see it. I know my girls, they're, you know, kind of in and out. Usually it's when Asuka, I think her name is, Asuka. When she's on. Yeah, she is like captivated them, like being able to see, which is really cool for me because I remember watching Japanese wrestling when I was a kid. And like that was so exotic and cool. But then you got to see like Hulk Hogan go over there, or, you know, Jake the Snake Roberts or Mick Foley. You know, get to see these American superstars go and see the differences in the wrestling format, you know, and how combined things are getting. You know, that's a great part about being able to reach across the ocean and be able to be involved in that. With reaching out across the ocean, though, I do think that runs right into our last week's Wham.
Wham.
All right, man, so I was out last week, so why don't you go ahead and take this week's Wham?
Well, Master Senjo decided to grace us with King Kong as our Wham, and boy, did we get some answers for this one. Oh, man. So from the movie Rampage, there's a bunch of answers from the movie Rampage. We got Lizzie. We have Ralph. Oh, if anyone doesn't know, Lizzie is
the lizard.
The lizard, the supposed to be Godzilla in the video games. Ralph is the wolf. We even got the Incredible Hulk in here. We have the Alpha Dragon from How to Train Dragons. We have Reptar. I think Reptar is a bit small in there because they show him in here holding Tommy. We got Gamera, the flying turtle. We got the Black Diablo from Monster Hunter.
Yeah.
We have one of the Jaegers from Pacific Rim,
yeah.
Mainly, I'm pretty sure this is the Gypsy. We have a Beast Titan from Attack on Titan. We have Fing Fang Foom. We have the Iron Giant. We have Ant-Man. We have the White Tiger Zord. We have Susan. We have Hozaru, or the Great Ape from Dragon Ball series. And we have the baby from Honey, I Blew Up the Kids, when the baby gets to be a giant.
And on Instagram, we have George from Rampage. So I think we've finally rounded out like all of the characters from Rampage. Natalie Artemis, which was Mila Jovovich's character from Monster Hunter. We have Starro, of course, from The Suicide Squad. Rajang from the Monster Hunter. I think he's like the Minotaur-looking dude. And finally, the Meg from the Meg. I think that one's probably my favorite because it's completely dependent on where they're at. Like, if you drop the Meg on land, it would just, like, flop like a fish. So it'd be kind of useless. And Kong, I think Kong could probably swim, but I don't feel like that would be that much of a fair fight. Yeah.
I mean, he did take on an oversized giant octopus in Skull Island and ate it. So the Meg would be lunch.
That's fair. I mean, as Denzel said, King Kong ain't got shit on me. But he does have shit on a lot of other people. So respect to the Kong, of course. I know that the new movie's coming out. I'm kind of excited to watch that as well, because we finally get to see, which I'm calling Diddy. I'm calling Diddy Kong, because I feel like if you're going to have the Kong and you're going to have a baby Kong, you have to have Diddy. So I'm excited. I love the MonsterVerse stuff, especially the Skull Island guys. Those were really cool. And I didn't even mind the newer Godzilla that came out. Like, that one wasn't bad. As these films progress, I feel like they're probably only going to get better. And really, it's a format that no matter what, and I don't care what age you are, you just want to see giant things go up against giant things and destroy cities. It's the primal urge in every boy to destroy the sandcastle in which you built with an action figure. So I don't feel like there's any issue with it, and I can't wait to see what happens.
With that, sir,
yeah, go ahead.
I'm going to pause you. I got an idea for you that we're going to try out, just because you're mentioning it. I have something called Flick It, Tick It, or Netflix It.
Flick It, Tick It, or Netflix It. All right.
I got a bunch of movies that are out this month. I want to try to see if I can do this as a monthly thing, naming out all the monthly movies, and see which one that we either want to flick it, buy a movie ticket, or just wait until we Netflix it.
That's squared up. I like that.
Okay. So I think you already watched this one, Dune Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you went to the movie with that one, right?
I did. And that is 100% a ticket. You need to buy it.
Bam. And I really enjoyed the first one. Well, and that was during COVID time. So it was like, what else we're going to do? And that one was freaking awesome. Especially the size of that freaking sandworm.
Exactly.
Next one is Kung Fu Panda 4.
I loved the first two. I did not watch the third one in theaters, but I did take my daughters to the first two in theaters. We watched the third one on Netflix. I feel like that's going to be a Netflix it.
Okay. Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
See, you can't do that. Like, if we're going to have three movies like that, I need to know the three movies before I, like, make that. Because I definitely want to go see that in the theaters. So it might have to be a double ticket on that one.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, see, hey, they did really good with the last one. And I guess, you know, of course, that was around COVID times and we were all waiting for that. But they brought the nostalgia back with it. And I see that they've been doing that a lot with movies now, or they waited so long to produce a sequel, and we finally get it, you know, freaking 20 years later. And then, of course, you just mentioned Godzilla X Kong. I got my ticket ready, so it's already a ticket for me. And then that's it for this month. There have been movie trailers that came out. We're fans of Roadhouse, I'm pretty sure. That's a safe assumption. Mm-hmm. Did you see the new Roadhouse?
No, that's a flick it, 100%. I refuse to watch that. On the basis of Jake Gyllenhaal by itself, like, ever since Donnie Darko, I've not been able to deal with that dude. Like, I could stomach him in the newer Spider-Man because I knew Mysterio was going to be a bad guy regardless. But I can't – he's got a very punchable face. And the fact that they tried to make him like a badass in this just does not, these two things don't equate.
Well, it's also the debut of Conor McGregor.
The man doesn't need to act. I mean, he is champion shit talker, and needed to stay that way. And I'm just going to say it, and I know it might not be a popular opinion, but proper 12 whiskey is god awful. It is terrible. It is just like water. You can pretty much drink the whole bottle by itself and feel like you got nothing. And this is from an Irish whiskey connoisseur.
And then last but not least, they just showed him the crow.
Flick it. Other than the fact that I like that they brought Ozzy, but if they wanted to get the feel of the I'm not even talking about the movie. Like you have to separate the Brandon Lee movie out, right? Because if you don't do that, nothing's going to compare. This is like the Edward Furlong third movie that you only saw because it was on Cinemax at like 2 p.m. in the afternoon. That's what this movie gives to me. If they're trying to go back to the original comic book, Skarsgård doesn't give that energy. He just doesn't. You can't look at him and see Matt. Like, he seems like they took Leto's Joker and even more gothed him up. That's really all they did. And I can't see it. I'll probably watch it just, you know, because the subject matter is amazing. I really enjoyed the comics. I really enjoyed the movie. But I can't do it. I can't do it.
It'll probably be a Netflix it for me.
I do. You know, I really enjoyed that. I think we need to keep that up. But unfortunately for us, we have forgotten the 01.
Welcome to the Dynamike Network. I am the cyber intelligent being that has dominion over the domain of the Max Destruction Arena. I am the 01, but you may call me Francis. I will take your favorite heroes, villains, and any other jacked up protagonist across the cinematic multiverse and put them to the ultimate test of metal. Two brawlers will enter the arena, but only one can reign supreme. However, all paths lead to Max destruction.
I feel like we're in trouble.
Yeah, well,
like you brought a little more rage in there.
You kind of caught us off guard when you introduced Macho Man in there. So I'm pretty sure he understands that he had to sit back and let Macho Man talk.
It's, you know, honestly, now I kind of want to have Francis go up against Macho Man in a promo. Like, I don't want them to fight, but I want like a dueling promo, like having Mean Gene, but it's Francis and Macho Man, like just going back and forth. I think that would be amazing. All right, dude. So why don't we get to this week's fight, which, I mean, the last time you and I did a fight was ninjutsu kind of martial arts, you know, going back into the nostalgia machine we did. And I felt like we had so much fun with that we should probably do it again. But this time, instead of going way back into that nostalgia machine, we're going to go slightly back in the nostalgia machine for one and then really back for the other. And that, of course, is, I think, the martial arts movie to finalize martial arts movies. Beverly Hills Ninja, the Haru, the Great White Ninja, played masterfully by Chris Farley, versus Shownuff, the villain of The Last Dragon, which, if people that have never seen that movie need to go watch it. It is so bad, it's good.
It's probably a cinematic history right there now.
Facts. A little aside, and I was going to tell you before this, but I felt like it needed to be said on the pod. So I like to go to Comic Cons, as you do, and most of our listeners probably do. And, you know, at Comic Cons, you have it sectioned off, right? So you have where all the actors and, you know, producers and are on one side, you know, where you go and get your autographs. And then you usually have like your cosplayers, and then you have your writers and illustrators, comics on. And then you have typically like, we'll call it like the bazaar, right? Where people go and hawk their goods. Well, the last Comic-Con that I went to in Kansas City, as I'm walking by the end of the bazaar, like getting to the food court items, who do I see but Bruce Leroy sitting there at a card table just by himself, hawking copies of DVDs of The Last Dragon with his signature on it. It was probably the saddest thing I'd ever seen, because I remember watching that movie on repeat when I was a kid. So I literally just sat there. I bought three DVDs from him and just talked to him for like 20 minutes. And I felt bad. I mean, I did. It's sad to see, but you know, sometimes you just got to cut your losses on certain things, because I don't feel like he did anything else of note. But with that, I think.
I mean, the star of that movie was Shownuff.
That's fair. But to get into our character's history, of course, we go into the tale of the cocoa butter.
On Mac's destruction, the hosts use a semi-idiotic method called the tale of the cocoa butter as a clever device to provide character backstories, much like Rogan does at the UFC. The hosts go through their respective characters' backgrounds, abilities, and equipment to provide the best possible description for the listeners. If these guys were to just use your run-of-the-mill standards, they couldn't really claim to be an action character podcast, could they?
And we do, of course. So I think I'm going to go first, since how I'm coming back from the dead. And I'm going to bring you who really is the true champion here, Chris Farley's Haru, the Great White Ninja. And I'll start it off with the quote. The quote is, "I may not be the best ninja. I may not be one with the universe, but I will tell you this, no one messes with my brother." And that's really all you need to know about Haru. Haru is the main protagonist in the 1997 comedy film Beverly Hills Ninja. He is an American male who was raised in Japan by a group of skilled ninja, and he is adopted son of the dojo sensei and adopted brother of Gobei, who was masterfully played by Liu Kang himself from Mortal Kombat, Robin Shu, which unfortunately I tried to go back and find like more of what he did, and I feel like he just kind of went into obscurity as a fight choreographer, much like Ernie Reyes Jr. I feel like that's kind of where Robin Shu ended up, which is sad because I thoroughly enjoyed him as Liu Kang. But continuing on with this film, he is portrayed by the late Chris Farley, who famously portrayed Matt Foley on Saturday Night Live, Tommy Callahan in Tommy Boy, and Mike Donnelly in Black Sheep. Haru was born sometime prior to the events in which the movie takes place, having lost his parents at sea and ending up on the shores of Japan. There, a clan of skilled ninja discover Haru in a wooden chest, taking the boy in and training him to become a ninja. Haru would learn alongside his adopted older brother Gobei in the arts of combat and ninjutsu, but grew up to become a rather overweight, clumsy, and inept individual, struggling in his training to become a ninja. While others of his class became ninjas successfully, including his own brother, Haru is given the task to watch the dojo while the others are away on a mission. While training himself rather unsuccessfully, Haru is met by a beautiful woman who is under the alias of Sally Jones. She seeks a ninja to follow a man named Martin Tanley in the hopes of finding out if he is up to no good. Haru accepts the assignment and tracks Tanley in Japan, where he discovers that he is a criminal operating a counterfeiting ring with the members of the Yakuza. With this information, he attempts to inform Sally, only to find she had left beforehand, and he must now venture forth to Beverly Hills to find her. Saying goodbye to his family, Haru leaves for America, where he finds the customs of Western culture differ significantly from those in the East. Nevertheless, Haru is determined to find Sally and inform her of what he's learned. And thus, all of the shenanigans continue, to include having Chris Rock as the valet, who is also a budding ninja master himself as he is learning from Haru. All that is required, you know, things like being able to disappear in plain sight and, you know, scaling walls and being able to fight multiple enemies at the same time. Of course, Haru, again, played masterfully by Chris Farley, is not the person that you would think of immediately when you come with a martial arts master, but oh, there lies the problem. Once he becomes one with the universe, anything is possible for Haru. his skills and abilities. Since his adoption of the clan, Haru had undergone training to become a great warrior. Despite his quirks of being overweight, clumsy, and inept, Haru has demonstrated to possess skills that make him a formidable foe. Martial arts, like all who live in his clan, Haru has demonstrated to become a superb martial arts master. He's taken on enemy combatants on his own, as well as with his brother. Agility, despite his body being way overweight, Haru demonstrated to possess quite an agile nature, such as feats including the ability to perform a split in between two large crates to dodge an incoming knife. He was also able to perform a flip in midair while jumping down and taking down an opponent about to kill Gobe. He is a martial arts weapons expert. Haru is shown to be well-versed in various weapons, to include the katana, ninja stars, nunchucks. Though the full extent on each individual one is unknown, he is capable of moving about two swords as fast enough to actually deflect bullets in midair. Finally, he is a complete master of astral projection. Not saying he is a master at doing everything in the astral projection, but he is in fact able to remove his spirit form, travel great distances, and talk to his sensei so far from home. He usually can't control his astral form in terms of moving about in the air, but is successfully capable of speaking with his master, and when he returns to the physical form, it usually sends him flying either through others or through windows. Haru is, as stated before, inept, and he's shown his clumsy nature on more than one occasion, such as when he ran right into the back of a stopping bus, showing he is very gullible as well. As well as Sally Jones, who it turns out to be Allison Page rather than her real name. Despite all of this, Haru has a good heart and truly means well. Even if others don't see it in him, he looks up to his brother and wishes to be like him initially, but eventually learns to become his own man, as well as the greatest of the white ninjas ever to have served. And that, my friend, is Haru.
Well, speaking of brothers... And, hey, someone who was already one with the universe, I guess. Because in The Last Dragon, I guess, in order to get the glow, you have to be one with the universe, as Bruce Leroy was trying to get. And this person already had it. He is the EST of Harlem. What do I mean by that? Say it with me, Ken. Is he the meanest? Show enough. Is he the prettiest? Show enough. Is he the baddest mofo low down around town? Show enough. I can't hear you. Show enough.
Yeah.
The Shogun of Harlem. He is the main villain in the 1985 martial arts. Oh my God, 1985. Martial arts film, The Last Dragon. He's a highly skilled and boastful martial artist. He is the self-proclaimed Shogun of Harlem, and he believes he is the best fighter in Harlem, or on the planet for that matter, and is determined to defeat the protagonist, Leroy Green, aka Bruce Leroy, who is dedicated his life to the philosophy of Bruce Lee's training. And he views himself as the only one who can stand in his way of total supremacy. I guess Harlem is the center of the world in this movie. There's not really much said about him, which is sad, in that movie, because they should have just made an entire movie about him, just like The Karate Kid should be about the Cobra Kai. Shonuff is the leader of his group. He is a 6'5", big old Afro black man, with strength to match it. He's a walking tank. He does not like to be challenged. I mean, we're introduced in the film of him going into a movie theater just so he can go watch a Bruce Lee movie. And then a bunch of people wanted to challenge him because they say Bruce Leroy is the master. But no, the Shogun proves to be the master when Bruce Leroy does not answer to his challenges. He is in the process, he's taken out multiple foe, i.e. the audience that go after him. And mind you, Ken, if you go back and watch this movie again, there's a whole bunch of stuff that does not work in today's standards of film.
Definitely not. Not this movie would not have been made the way it was back then. That's for certain. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he goes to Leroy's dad's pizza joint and destroys the place with his bare hands. He has a rage. I mean, if any time that he gets hit, he doesn't flinch much. But when he gets hit, he rages out and then completely tries to dismember the person with his bare hands. He beat a guy's freaking head in, just keep smashing it on the stage at the movie theater because the guy freaking slapped him. Just when Bruce Leroy thought he had the upper hand, kicked him right through a door, and he laid unconscious on the floor. All of a sudden, he disappears. Bruce Leroy doesn't know where he's at. He hears the ominous Leroy sound in the shadows, and then happens to be there is a glowing red Shonuff. And I'm assuming the power gives him a strength and agility, speed, and durability, because shots Leroy tries to do and was just being deflected with red lightning, was just sparking all over the place. Every time he touched the person, he would jump off of high platforms and land no problem. So I think when Haru sees Shonuff walk into the dojo, Haru have no choice but to bow to the real master and kiss his converse.
So I definitely remember watching this movie a lot when I was a kid. I definitely remember you can't get any better pizza than Big Daddy Green's pizza, which is sad that I definitely remember that. I will just say that, you know, Shonuff might be bigger. He might be stronger. Hell, he might have red glowing hands, but that doesn't defeat true good-heartedness, which is what Leroy brings, you know, and that's how Leroy is able to get the full glow. You know, Shonuff just has it in his hands. But I guess we'll see how that goes when we have our simulated fight. But before we do that, why don't we have Francis explain how that works?
The hosts believe that the next best thing to creating an irrefutable method to decide things, like a coin flip, would be hacking into AJ9K, the AI that those dynamic dual fools, sorry, upstanding gentlemen use. Once hacked, the guys input statistics for the subjects of this week's fight, including strength, fighting style, and most importantly, humor. The stats are then compared 1,000 times, presenting a final result to determine the ultimate victor. To avoid boring your ears off with numbers game, the hosts have elected to present a speculation on how one of the fights play out for your listening pleasure. Now, despite my best efforts, it seems that every simulation manages to occur within the vicinity of the safe house I find my way to. Fortunately, the environment isn't relevant to the simulations. I mean, fortunate for them and you. It sucks for me.
I mean, it does, but I mean, luckily, there's always seems to be a glass coffee table around. And plenty of things for our characters to either fly through, bust through, or, you know, just random things that help them out throughout the way. But as Francis says, we don't factor those things into our speculation, the simulation rather. They're just good fun, which is great for Scotty and I, because both of us, I feel like, prescribe to the general Irish brawler style of martial arts. You know, I'm not too keen on the blocking, kicking, and all that. I think I'd rather just, you know, bear through and fight you on the ground, and usually do so after a couple of shots of liquid courage. I don't know how it goes with you. The army fighting style isn't great. I tend to want to shoot you from further away. That way I don't have to worry about you coming close.
Yeah, in the Coast Guard, we just kind of push them in the water and then let them marinate in the Pacific Ocean until they're ready to come back on a boat.
Just wait for the Meg, right? You have the Meg do your dirty work. I get it. All right, Scott. So I feel like these two would probably meet in a warehouse of some type, you know, like a dock where there's a whole bunch of random, like, big wooden crates and things. Haru's a ninja. Now, he might be a portly, large American, I believe, was called in Black Sheep. But he is still, in fact, a ninja. So I don't think he is going to let Shonuff know where he's at right away. Now, he's clumsy, so likely knocking over a box or two around. But he's going to try to keep his distance initially.
All right. Well, then he's going to see Shonuff usually in some type of tournament in his dojo, you know, wherever you go. Because he's trying to be the supreme master. So he's going anywhere and everywhere where there's a fight. So he probably sees Shonuff dispatching another fighter and making him kiss his Converse.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm rather certain Haru probably is around this area because he's seen how this terrible human being of a martial artist is just trying to lay waste and make people do things that they shouldn't be, you know, and Haru's not about that. Haru is definitely about, you know, making sure people are taken care of, you know, and respect is the name of the game. Regardless of whether or not ninjas actually do that, I feel like that's where he's going to be. So Haru is going to watch as this lumbering, you know, guy in half Shogun, half 80s action garb is just kind of lumbering through. And then he is going to set off a couple of his smoke bombs that he has in his ninja kit all around in order to see, you know, what's going to happen if he obscures the area. So he's going to let off a couple of smoke bombs and then come in for like a side kick into Shonuff's midsection, you know, in the flurry of things going on.
Awesome. He's going to take that kit. Like I said, you know, he's not prone to getting hurt, but what he just does would just piss the Shogun off. So he wipes that away and be like, this fat fool decided to step against the Shogun, and then I'm going to show you who's the master. So he's going to get into his tiger stance, his cat's paw, and then he's going to tell Haru, when I say who's the master, you're going to say Shonuff. So he hits him with the palm strike. And he's going to say, who's the master? He's going to hit him with another palm strike. Who's the master? And then he's going to follow up with his Harlem sidekick, knocking Haru down to the ground. And then ask him, kiss my Converse.
Well, Haru is not a stranger to taking damage. I mean, really, that's 99% of his day is either getting thrown through things, getting beat up. I mean, it's very likely that the entirety of his life, he was the training dummy in which all the other ninjas fought with. But, you know, he took it with good heart because everybody was nice to him, or so he thought. So Haru's going to take all this damage. But the good thing about Haru is he's got a protective layer around his innards, right? He's got you know, I'm not going to call it armor, but it's very close to it. You know, it's a naturally occurring thing. Ozempic didn't exist back then, or else Chris Farley probably would have been a lot smarter. But it's fine. So who's going to take this damage? And then he's going to like skirt away, you know, trying to lay like a sweeping kick on Shonuff as he moves away. And then he's going to go and post up like on top of a crate, and then he's going to get down into his Zen pose, and then he's going to astrally project himself back to the ninja's, you know, dojo, where he's going to find Gobe. And Gobe is now the new sensei, in which he's going to be like, there's this really big dude. I'm not real sure what I can do about this, you know, and he's going to be flailing around and being crazy in the clouds, you know, and Gobe is going to be like, dude, just be one with the universe, be one with the universe. In which case Gobe's going to like palm strike his astral projection back into him. As he comes flying back, he's going to enter into Haru's body, which is going to cause him to cannonball through a crate directly into Shonuff and through another crate.
That's freaking awesome. So Shonuff takes it. And he's going to be like, what the blue hell did just freaking happen? So he stands up to get his bearings, and he grabs Haru by his big round neck, holds him up, and then now his left hand starts glowing red. And so he's going to do four quick palm strikes to Haru's face, and then you got the red glow sparks happening, and then he's going to hit him with a quick right side kick followed by a left spin kick, sending Haru through another crate, and then he's going to hop right on top of the two crate stack and then come down with a knee drop right into Haru's back.
Haru's definitely going to take some damage on this. I mean, the glowing hand thing is, I'm going to assume, for lack of a better way, it's kind of like the key power up from Dragon Ball, right? I feel like that's probably where they were going with that, you know, being able to increase their key, which is going to speed them up. So all of those strikes are just going to start moving faster than Haru can see. So luckily, when he came flying back, he understood he needed to get back to his oneness, his oneness with the universe. So he's going to take this pummeling, but as Shonuff is coming down with that knee drop, trying to like just disable Haru completely, Haru is going to use agility up to this point never before seen with somebody this large. He is going to spin out, get back to his feet, and then start maneuvering his hands around like he's swinging his swords. And then, in which case, he's going to just start blocking everything that Shonuff is sending at him. You know, he's able to move faster than Shonuff is able to. And then before Shonuff knows what's going on, Haru is going to do a backflip kick directly into Shonuff's nuts, sending him flying, in which case Haru's going to like land in his ninja pose, waiting with a couple of ninja stars, sending them flying at Shonuff, trying to end this match.
Or he does the nut shot, but then his foot stops, and then it's just a red spark, and then the meanest, prettiest Shonuff looks at him with his brute stance.
You done fucked up, fat boy.
And then with his red glowing right hand, closes it into a fist, and then punches his hand right through Haru's face. Ending the match.
That's terrifying. Like, way worse than what Haru is doing. But, you know, I get it. He's a villain. He's supposed to be bad. And he was bad. But he did get beat up by someone way smaller and less powerful. But that's fine. We'll just say. All right. So either Haru is able to heroically become one with the universe, disabling Shonuff's defenses down to the point where he's able to put ninja stars into him, you know, disabling him further, or Shonuff puts his hand through Haru's face. I think that's a great place to stop. It's unfortunate for Haru, but we'll see how it all turns out. But let's move right into the destruction spectrum.
It's time for the destruction spectrum, or as I like to call it, collateral damage that makes just a modicum of sense. Here, the hosts take the character's destruction potential and rate it on a scale of 1 to 5. To put it bluntly, it's how much collateral damage they can cause before the National Guard has to step in, be it a barroom brawl or a world-ending nuclear holocaust. The hosts will persevere and provide you with this valuable information because, let's face it, this is why you're here.
We basically just made like a live action Kung Fu Panda especially when you did that Astro Prediction Slam.
I feel like Jack Black really was channeling his inner Chris Farley when it came to that film. And you know, maybe we're on to something, that there was, you know, maybe a little copyright infringement, you know, a little thought stealing. Cause you can't honestly tell me that if Chris Farley was still alive, Jack Black would have played Kung Fu Panda. I feel like Chris Farley would have had that. So, All right, dude, where do you feel like this falls on the destruction spectrum?
Oh, I know it's going to be a solid one for me. Just for, I know, Shownuff has showed that he can destroy a room just by himself with his hands, but other than that, they don't really bring much, destructive, to their fights. So
I think that's fair. I go with that as well. I don't, you know, there's a little bit of collateral damage, but not more than like a broom and a dustpan and maybe like a couple of coats of paint wouldn't solve. So yeah, no, I square up with that. All right, man. Let's go to next week's Wham.
Wham.
All right, for this week's Wham, it was actually brought up, and I think it was a great idea. I think we should do Eddie Murphy's vampire from American Vampire in Brooklyn. You know, keeping it with that theme. I'm going to have to remember his name, but definitely interested to see who are on that monster theme, but, you know, more localized, like who our audience feels like is going to be able to square up with Eddie Murphy as a vampire.
Hmm. That was a good movie too.
It was. They're all very solid, and keeping with the SNL theme, that's really where I'm at with it. All right, man. Do you want the results of this fight? I mean, do you really want the results of this fight?
I already know it's going to be the meanest, prettiest, and baddest mofo low down around town.
All right. So in the results, it's actually way shocking. Of 1,000 matches, Haru, the Great White Ninja, versus Shownuff. The winner is Haru.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, it's a little more one-sided, I feel like, than it probably should be. We could rerun this, but honestly, I feel like this is probably where it needs to be when we break it down. Haru won 771 of the 1,000 matches. And here's why. Movement speed definitely goes to Shownuff. Shownuff has the movement speed comparatively to the portly Chris Farley. However, these things do start to equal out as you contend that he is a portly man that seems to be a completely adept ninja when he's at his prime. So both of these are like glow Shownuff versus prime Chris Farley Haru. Evasiveness, we said they were both about the same because both of them are tanks. Durability, I actually gave a little bit more to Chris Farley, just the simple fact that the amount of damage that the man takes during the entirety of the film, and he is able to continue on like there's nobody's issues, I felt like durability probably went Haru's way. Strength, damage level, fighting skill, we all went pretty much, you know, even-handed on a lot of that. Where it stopped was range and strategic intelligence. So range, Haru had it because he actually had ranged weapons that he utilized. And strategic intelligence, because he has the ability to astrally project and go and get advice and be able to return and utilize that as a striking force, Haru comes out on top with this fight. I feel like we could probably rerun that with, you know, maybe base level Haru, but I didn't think that was very fair if we were to do base level versus base level Shownuff.
No, I'd agree with that. I mean, like I said, I watched that thing two times last night, and he doesn't have any weapon. Everything was strictly hand to hand with him. If we went Haru versus Blue Suruai, maybe a different story, because then he had ninja stars, throwing knives, and nunchucks in there to combat with. Shownuff didn't have any of that. He was a walking brute.
Indeed, indeed. Now, I think before we get out of here, we should talk about next week. No, we've been going pretty hard in the paint when it comes with martial artists. We come with weapon systems. I mean, we even went with a dragon zord. Next week, I think we should bring it back to the brains over the brawn. And I'm pretty excited about this matchup. We have Ned Leeds, who is the guy in the chair for Spider-Man in the newer Spider-Verse, versus Micro, the guy in the chair for the Punisher in the Netflix version of Punisher. I'm pretty excited about this matchup just because I feel like two guys in a chair, it's going to be interesting to see how they match up.
It's funny because then it'd be two guys in a chair talking about two guys in the chair.
Indeed. But luckily, both of us can back ours up. And I feel like Ned Leeds and Micro can definitely back theirs up. But you're going to have to stay tuned to see how that match goes. All right, man, before we get out of here, I think we did it. It was a great comeback. I'm glad to be back with you and with our audience. And we're going to keep churning these out as long as people keep listening.
Yes, sir.
I think we are going to keep your, was it Flick It, Ticket, Netflix It? I think we're going to keep that. Maybe we'll have another drop on that. And I feel like Nacho Man, because copyright infringement, Nacho Man will continue to be a much needed request for taking it to the mat. As Max Destruction continues to build its supremacy within the Dynamike Network. Oh, yeah.
The big one. Make sure to check out the other shows on the Dynamite Network, folks. We got Syndro World for your anime battles. We have Console Combat, John Strosky, for your video game battles. And then we also have the Dynamic Duel, who does our DC and Marvel battles. DC all the way.
Indeed. Definitely go back and check those out. Less on Console Combat, just because we all know how, you know, John Strosky, he needs a win sometimes. You know, he's trying. He actually had a thought yesterday, which was great for him. We all applauded it. So, all right, guys, we're going to head out. Keep on keeping on, and we'll hear you next week. Hit up our social medias for this week's Wham. And then just drop us any feedback you guys have. We really enjoy it. Take care, guys.
Thank you.
I feel like Nacho Man is definitely the way to go. It's kind of like that Nacho Libre, and I feel like Nacho Man would just be a hilarious way of doing this.
I can't wait to do a Nacho Man, the freaking promo with Francis. It's like Jake the Snake talking with Macho Man.
It's going to be great.